When you were little, what kinds of food would you eat at the ranch? What was a typical, like a potluck at the ranch house?
I don't remember. Beans and tofu. I remember the children, we used to laugh about the food. And I remember one of the kids that I grew up with, Eric Farrow, he used to call it toad food. And the poor kid had probably toad food sandwiches, you know, for lunch. Oh, peanut butter and banana. Oh my God, how gross. But that was the lunch, and we were happy for a peanut butter and banana sandwich. And then this is something that I've like compared notes with other hippie kids around the country. Those like honey sesame things. Like that's all the sweets we got, you know. And I remember my dad was sort of renegade in this way, and he'd like allow me to bring up like Snickers bars or whatever to the ranch house. And boy, that was serious contraband. Oh my God. But I'd slip them to my friends. So food.
Let me ask you about special occasions like Christmas or Easter. Can you remember a particularly memorable or a wedding, a particularly memorable occasion like that?
And you're asking a memorable occasion for some time in the 1970s, when that's sort of the heyday of it all, anytime? Because there's kind of an aura to the memories of the 1970s that is very sparkly and sepia-toned. And wondrous. And one of the memories that I have is of Mark Gary and Lori Leaf's wedding. And I think that this might be a little bit like legendary. And I don't know why, but I just remember the beautiful summertime tall oak grasses. And we're driving to the site of where they were getting married, and I was sitting in the back of the I was sitting in the back of the truck, and I was reaching my hand out to grab the as we drove past the tall grasses to see what I could touch of the tall grasses, the oak grasses, and see if you can, you know, grab off some of those the seed heads, right? Exactly. So pulling off the seed heads from the oak grasses as we drove by, and that smells of the warm new summer, and then this sort of expansiveness of this incredibly beautiful landscape, and the joy. There was a lot of joy at that wedding, and there was a lot of openness and freedom. And I remember the experience of being naked and eating watermelon and letting the watermelon juices absolutely flow down my chest and belly, and being just absolutely like sticky and sweet and free with a bunch of other kids doing the very same thing, and a whole bunch of adults being completely happy and perfectly fine that we were running around naked and dirty with watermelon running down our bodies. And that is a sense of freedom that, I mean, it's just, who has ever had that? That's different. It's really, really different. And so that I remember. And so many times since then, you know, at that point, you know, I mean, during that period of time in my life, the freedom to be in my body as a girl in nature has absolutely informed who I am today. Well, I feel completely at home in my body. You know what it is? It's a kind of, I have a sense of what a birthright about it. The sense of this is right, this is real, this is true, this is existence, this is beingness. And I have the right to fully experience this life, this body, this being, and my womanhood within it. Now, growing up as a girl, changing from a woman in the Back to the Land movement was not easy. There was a period, because we were naked all the time when we were kids. So then suddenly we start to change a little bit. And of course, you know, it's not like culture changed that much. We're starting to get like eyes from the, you know, older farts or whatever, you know, or you're feeling like you're gonna, or whatever is gonna happen. And so we started to cover over some of the girls as we were starting to go through these changes. And then the fact that we were even wearing bathing suits became an issue. And some of the older women were like, "You're wearing a bathing suit now, I see," or something like that. So it was like, damned if you do, damned if you don't. But coming through that, you know, once I came into my 20s and really reconnected with my roots, you know, really regrounded into my body, and there's a specific memory I have of being in my 20s, and I was going to college at Evergreen State College, and I'd come back for the summers and hang out on the ranch, and I would go down to the pond, and I'd be all alone. I'd lay out on the and sunbathe on the dock, on the raft in the middle of the pond, in the middle of the beautiful world. And I was just meditating there, and I do that day after day after day. I just was, that's what I wanted to be. It was my recharge. It was my finding myself. Well, one day, because sometimes you get people coming up to the ranch that are just sightseers, and one day I hear a car drive up to the parking lot, and I'm like, I wonder who's coming down to the pond. And I had a little back of my mind like, I wonder what this is. And then I see these shorts, swim shorts up at the tree line, and these three guys are up there, and one of them wolf whistles at me, which of course, I mean, there are certain things you don't do in a hippie commune. You don't wolf whistle at naked women in the pond, right? So this is clearly an outsider behavior. And I, first of all, of course I was frightened. I was like, oh my God, what can I do? Where can I go? What am I gonna do? Swim across the pond and run to the ranch house and, you know, how do I react to this? But of course I was also really angry. So I stood up buck naked in the middle of the pond, in the middle of the raft, in the middle of the whole wide world, and I told them to get their butts right down here where I can see you. And I just talked them right down, and I said, you do not talk to women like that. And I just fully just took it on, you know. They were like, whoa. We'll just go up here and swim upstream, you know. We'll go up there, and I know upstream you can't get, there's no way to get to the pond upstream. It's all like poison oak up there. I should have told him to do it anyway. But anyway, I was like, no, you get right down here, we're gonna have a conversation. What's your name? You know, I've been here all my life, and this is the way I get to be. And so having that kind of power in the ownership of my body in nature, I think is a really core part of who I am.
How about as you watched the dynamics between men and women as a child and then as you got older, how did the norms of relationship, the norms that I guess in previous generations, you didn't know them, but as you watched what was going on at the ranch or in other communities around you, the relationships between men and women, were you aware of how they shaped you?
Well, I would say that I was very aware, and I was particularly aware in a certain way because my mother was a very staunch feminist, and she was very adamant about her power in building that house right alongside my dad. And she would bring it up when people would, you know, other men would come by and she had a project going on and they would defer to my dad. And she'd be like, no, this is my project. I'm doing this. You talk to me about it. So she was really, really clear all the time about the dynamics between men and women. And so therefore, I got that. That was what I was growing up around. And she had some critiques of what it was like to be a woman on the land building on the land, and recognizing the patterns that she saw other women taking in doing the, you know, the babies and the canning and the whatever it was that was happening, that householdy stuff that was more traditional. She had critiques of that. And so I saw that through her lens to a certain degree. Again, I was an only child, and I was one of the only children on the ranch, and my mom was very clear. When I said, I want to have a brother or sister, she'd say zero population growth. And that was the answer, and that's all. So zero population growth was my sibling, right? So there were a lot. So also, there was an age range of people who moved up to the ranch as back to the landers. Of course, there were the children and everything, but then there was the 30s and they're all the way down to the 18-year-olds who were moving up. So I don't know if there was a lot of people that moved up who were much older than like 35 or maybe 40 at the very most when they moved up in the 70s. And my parents were older when they moved up, so they weren't having the babies. There was a whole crop of new babies, and that is its own cultural reality. Like, when you have babies, you're in another phase of your life, you know, in terms of relationships with men and women and all of that sort of thing. I know, though, that my mother really struggled with the old sexism still present. And she, you know, she's been very, very clear about that her whole life. There's a few women, I think, on the ranch that also embodied that same struggle. Sequoia was one of them. You know, living on the land alone as a woman was a very different experience than, you know, being a mom and doing the baby thing and the farming thing or whatever, while the man is expected to do all the building and all of that stuff. So I think that people really fell into a lot of the same old patterns by pretty much. There were, you know, certainly those who really worked on changing them as well.
How do you think growing up on the ranch, growing up in that community, shaped you?
Well, it's hard to have perspective on how much it's shaped me. It's shaped me in so many ways, as I mentioned, about just my experience of the being in the with the land. Also, my experience of groups and group process has really informed me a lot. Not every kid who grew up on the land or on Greenfield or anywhere else ended up having a real attraction. Fatal attraction, I guess, to group process, you know, but I was something that was really something I needed to work out for myself. Over time, you know, I've done a lot of group process work, and I feel that the one of the really amazing things that I've received from it is an ability to recognize and support collective conversations. So really understanding the differences when a group comes together and there's a lot of different individual perspectives, there's a certain threshold where that shifts into collectivizing, where people start to have a shared sense with each other. And I've learned that. I've learned that from the time I was a little girl all the way till now. And it's become so much a part of how I interact with groups that I don't even realize it's happening. But I tend to speak to the collective energy of a group rather than involve, because there's a difference in, there's a threshold between people can get involved in groups and still hold on to their own ego perspective in it. And it's not like there's not egos on Greenfield, for God's sakes, there are. And everybody has their own ego in a group. But that ability to have that give and take with the commonality and understand when commonality is speaking, if you even can feel that. And as a facilitator, it helps me to be able to speak to, okay, here's where I feel like the shared sense is coming to, and here's where we need more information, and here's where we have divergence, like you really feel strongly about that, and you feel really strongly about that, you know, and then being able to tease apart my perspective as well, to say, okay, here's where I differ from the group, and here's what I see the group needs, you know. That's really actually influenced me professionally. I use that in my work all the time. But what's most dear to my heart, I think, is my relationship with the land. And that is something that, I mean, there's a part of that movie, Nell. You ever see the movie Nell? And where Jodie Foster is Nell, and she's been taken out of the woods where she grew up forever in the woods. The first time she's a young adult, and she comes into the city, and she's in the back of a convertible with a shell down, and she's looking up at the buildings, and she's just freaking out. And I went to see that with a couple of my besties from the ranch, Lasara and Shelley, and we just howled with laughter at that part, because we totally related to what it felt like to go to the city after being completely immersed in nature. We're just like, what is it? Oh my God! And just like needing to crawl into a potted plant and feel like you could ground again or something. So that was a shock. You know, that was part of, I think, the shock of coming out of that sepia-toned, beautiful bubble of the 70s and into real life, or whatever, that's real life too, but into concrete jungle, right? But I've learned how to maintain a dialogue with nature and to really connect with that part of myself that can feel the spirit of the land and appreciate the wild and receive nourishment and guidance. And that's, I think that's the greatest gift. I wish I could give that to my kids these days. I bet I can't, actually, unless I throw them out in the creek for 5 years, which sometimes I wish I could do. But nowadays, you know, there's all this screen and it separates us, you know, from that direct experience of being on the land and slowing down and feeling it and smelling it and watching the ripples over the creek water and just being in that space. That's something that's really precious.
Do you have a sense of how the Back to the Land movement and the people who came here and how they lived and what they were interested in and what they were hoping to do, how that shaped the county? Mm-hmm. And is it still shaping the county?
Absolutely.
Tell me.
Very much so. Well, now, memory is a funny thing because we have our original memories and then they become overlaid with our perspectives, our memories of our memories. So you can speak to it at any one of those levels. I have the memories, the core memories of what it was like, for instance, to come down off of the ranch and deal with what it was like to be in town and feel the separation and the sense of disparagement and the prejudice against the hippies and the difficulty of going to school here in Ukiah in the 80s and all of that stuff. And then later on in my 20s, I was curious about this experience that I had had, and I reached out to people all throughout the whole nation about growing up in community and guest edited the community's magazine on that topic. So I found a lot of commonalities across the nation about this kind of experience. And in looking back, you see things differently. You have a little broader perspective. At the time, I didn't, of course, understand or know. We were in that phase of disillusionment that I spoke of, where people were kind of pulling back in, and they were taking care of their own stuff. And people call it the me generation or whatever, and I don't really know if it's anything, if that was really real. But I do know that one of the things I think people did is they pulled their own professional lives together. And they started to, the cultural focus shifted from the 70s being really inward focused on the ranch house as the community center. Now, of course, we would go out to Albion and everybody have fun at the Albion Fair. So there was that kind of networking going on with other nexuses of the Back to the Land movement. But it was that inward focused kind of, I mean, inward in the sense of communal focused. Then when it shifted into an individual focus, people put their energies back into the world at large, into the society in general. And they got their degrees, right? They finished whatever they were going to do to finish, right? My dad went back to school and my mom got a job with the winery for a while. And, you know, and they turned that energy into their own self-development. And I mean, I have to say, Kate, your generation is an amazing generation of incredibly creative people. And that energy that moved people from the cities to the land incredible creative energy to build your home and to try to hammer out a new way of living with each other and fight with each other about your dogs and the roads and whatever. And then all that creative energy turned into the Ukiah Players Theater. It turned into birthing centers. It turned into psychotherapist practices. It turned into people got jobs in the county. People got, I mean, we infiltrated. And we're still infiltrated. I mean, and in fact, so I work in fire recovery now. I work with a lot of nonprofit organizations that do service for a variety, you know, service work for the communities of Mendocino County in a variety of ways. And while I haven't actually asked everybody who's involved with those organizations, I can kind of tell culturally that they were all pretty much started by Back to the Landers. Really creative, cultural creatives, people who want to make a difference in the world. And instead of, you know, putting that into the community or their own little homes or whatever, you know, it was, it's not even an instead of, it's like an evolution. It was like the next natural step is to take that creative energy and move it out, you know, develop it into personal work, personal art, personal vocation, and give it out to the world more. And it has completely transformed the county.
Is there a song that you remember that from your early years? Is there a song that like is emblematic of the life you lived then?
Well, one of the things that happened a lot on the ranch was getting together in circles, especially before we had any meal. And so the kids were really hungry and we'd have to ohm. And we'd be like, everybody, all the hippies would be like, ohm. And we'd be like, yum. We're like waiting to be able to eat the food. And we're like, okay, you guys, right? But we also would sing a lot of songs. And I really enjoyed those songs. And there were several that we sang. And one of them that I've always loved is Listen, Listen, Listen to My Heart song.
Can you sing a little bit of it?
Listen, listen, listen to my heart song. Listen, listen, listen to my heart song. I will never forget you. I will never forsake you. I will never forget you. I will never forsake you.
Is there anything else you want to say?
Oh, there's a million things I want to say. You know, yeah, I would say that while there was a real beauty to the 70s, there was a dark side. And the dark side was the drugs. And especially for the kids to experience their parents on drugs a lot.
All different kinds of drugs?
Yeah, who knows? I don't know. Now, I consider myself to actually to be kind of like one of the lucky ones. Like my parents weren't active alcoholics while I was a kid growing up. There was some really wild stories about people high on acid driving on the roads and kids being like, okay, we're in the car with our parents and they are super high. How do we deal with this? We can't drive, you know? A variety of stories like that, and some, you know, serious alcoholic issues at home. And just because people moved back to the land did not mean that they left their baggage behind. They did not. They brought their baggage with them. And the same dynamic of, you know, in any dysfunctional family where there's the secret at home and you don't share it in the community, it was definitely still going on, although there was a lot more wildness. And there's a woman who received a PhD in mythological studies at Pacifica Graduate Institute, who she's actually from the area. I think she's from Boonville or something. And she wrote her dissertation on growing up in the counterculture. One of the phrases she said about it, she was said, it was all Dionysian all the time. So can you just imagine what it's like to be high all the time? You know, so there's no grounded, there's no structure. So that wildness, which was beautiful when I expressed how wonderful it was to be free and be naked and have watermelon juice, when there's nobody to tuck you in at night, that's not so good anymore. And so when you bring it home and that's not, you're still in that la la la, that's not so good. And then in the 80s, where there was the bar at the ranch house, you know, and there was a wave of cocaine that went through the ranch that affected us all, you know, in different ways. And so all the same things, all the family secrets, all that kind of stuff, only in a different milieu. And also, layered on top of that, we also had to hide where we came from when we went to town. And not only that, but the people in town were like, so what do you grow up there? And we were like, ooh, we don't want to be narcs and narc our parents out because they're growing pot. So Yes, we learned how to keep it shut, and that was hard. But of course, you know, as kids growing up on the ranch, we've shared those experiences with each other, and we certainly can laugh about them now. And there's a variety of life trajectories in terms of being able to heal from the things that have happened. You know, they really did affect us, but there were also really, really good aspects as well. You know, I think that all of us growing up on the ranch felt that really strong connection with nature and that sense of being nurtured by the land. And that helped us through.
Thank you.
You're welcome.